Masechet Makot Perek Aleph Mishnah Tet. We've been talking about halachot that apply to a large set or group of witnesses. Here the Mishnah is going to tell us what is considered to be a single set of witnesses and when are they considered to be different groups. Mishnah says, Hayu shenayim ro'in oto mehalon zeh, ushnayim ro'in oto mehalon zeh. If a person was committing a murder and there were two witnesses watching him from one window, and there were two other witnesses watching him from another window, and they both did not see each other. These sets of witnesses did not see each other. Ve'ehad matrebo ba'emsan. There was another person standing in the middle between the windows and was warning the person not to commit the act of murder. A person can only be sentenced to death if he was properly warned about how forbidden the crime is and the punishment for committing the crime. So one person warned them. He was in the middle. So there's five people who are involved here. Two in window one, two in window two. They don't see each other. And then there's a man warning the potential murderer. Bizman shebiksatan ro'in elu et elu. When some of the people see each other, what we mean here is, if the people giving the warning, or if the person giving the warning, saw the witnesses in the windows, and they saw him, hare elu edut ehat. All of these people are considered to be one set of witnesses, even though they couldn't all see each other. Like we said, the people in the witnesses could not see, in the windows could not see each other. The fact that they all could be seen by the person giving the warning, and the person giving the warning saw them, says that they all join together as one group. V'im lav, but if the person giving the warning did not see the witnesses in the windows and they did not see him, hare elu shete eduyot, then it's considered to be two sets of witnesses. The group in each window is considered to be its own set of witnesses. And how does it all play out? Halacha lema'aseh. Lefichach, therefore, im nimset ahat mehen zomemet, if you have both sets of witnesses testify, and according to the way we just concluded, let's say they didn't see each other, and they didn't have any contact, or didn't see the person who was giving the warning. So they're separate groups. And im nimset ahat mehen zomemet, and one of these two groups in the windows is found to be edim zomemim, that means another set of witnesses came, and they said, ah, this group who's in window one, who claimed to be in window one, and they saw a murder, they were with us. They couldn't have been there to see a murder. So now those edim are edim zomemim. They were trying to give testimony about somebody that he should be put to death. So we say these two witnesses in window one are put to death because they have other witnesses testifying about them. So they're put to death. Who vehen heragin? But not only are hen heragin, not only are they, the edim zomimim, killed, but who as well? Who is referring to the person who committed the murder? The person who was on trial for murder. Why? Because even though the edim zomimim are now out, we don't take their testimony, and they're actually put to death for what they tried to do to the defendant. They tried to have him executed, so we kill them. We also kill the person who's on trial for murder as well. Why? Because the other set of witnesses who are in window two are not connected to the people in window one. They're giving testimony. Their testimony is clean. We don't have any people claiming that they are edim zomimim. So their testimony works and it ends up serving to kill the person on trial. And that's what we say about Sheniya Petura, the second set of witnesses, who are not found to be edim zomemim, are fully exempt from punishment. The two sets of witnesses are different groups. They're not connected. The second one is not affected by the fact that the first set was found to be edim zomemim. So their edut works to kill the person on trial. And ironically, the edim zomemim, who were not really there, because other witnesses claim they weren't there at the time, they're put to death as well, because they tried to put somebody else to death, even though that person is being put to death as well by the testimony of window two. That's how it all plays out. That's all according to the understanding that they didn't have any connection and they were two separate groups. But if we go to the first way in the Mishnah, that they actually did have a connection through the person who was warning the potential murderer, then nobody is actually killed. How? In that case, all the witnesses are considered to be one set of people. And once some of them are found to be edim zomimim, the rest of the witnesses are disqualified as well. So even though only the people in window 1 are found to be edim zomimim, the people in window 2 are now automatically dragged along and disqualified from giving testimony. They're not edim zomimim, but they're not allowed to give testimony anymore. So the person on trial for murder is not put to death because there's no valid testimony against him. Likewise, the people who are actually edim zomimim are not killed either. Because if there are edim zomimim, the only way we kill them, that we bring punishment to them, is if they're all of the witnesses who are part of the group are found out to be edim zomimim. So here, the people in window 2 are not edim zomimim, so we don't kill the people in group 1 who are actually edim zomimim. That's the halacha. So since in this case, some of the witnesses were found to be zomimim, some not, we don't kill any of the witnesses, but their testimony is all thrown out, and therefore in that version of how things play out, nobody would die. According to the above, or really the beginning of the Mishnah, we sort of said if the witnesses in the window and the person in the middle don't have any relationship, they don't even see each other, the person in the middle who's giving the warning is not considered to be part of either group. But the fact is, he can still give the warning. They in the window could be the witnesses, and that's enough to have the person who's on trial executed. But Rabbi Yosei is going to disagree. Rabbi Yosei omer le'olam en heragin ad shehu pi shene aidav matrin bo. Says Rabbi Yosei that a criminal is not executed unless the two witnesses who testify against him, and they are the witnesses, that they also gave him the warning. But if a different person gave the warning, like in our case, and the other people were the witnesses, then the warning is not valid, and the criminal cannot be given the death penalty. How does he learn it out? Shene emar al pi shenayim edim. He learns it out from the pasuk that says, by the word of two witnesses. He learns out from here that whatever is going to be done, and the continuation of that pasuk is, al pi shenayim edim, or shelosha edim, yumat hamet. The person is going to be put to death. So he learns that from here, that whatever is going to go into putting this person to death, including the warning, has to happen by the same two witnesses. That's the opinion of Rabbi Yosei, arguing on the implied opinion of Tanakama. Davar acher, another interpretation we learn that from this pasuk. Al pi shenayim edim, the pasuk where it says, by the word of two witnesses, by the word of two witnesses, shelot tehe Sanhedrin shoma'at mipiatur geman, that the judges, the shofetim of the Sanhedrin, are not allowed to hear the testimony through an interpreter. The word pi over here, al pi shenayim edim, is telling us that the judges have to hear the words of the witnesses. They have to understand the language of the witnesses and can only listen to testimony directly from those witnesses and not through an interpreter or somebody else. Masechet Makot Perek Aleph Mishnah Yod. Mishnah says, Mi shenigmar dino ubarach. If somebody was sentenced to death by the Bet Din outside of Eretz Yisrael and then he ran away before he was executed, and he was caught, and they brought him back in front of the same Bet Din. But that Bet Din now moved to Eretz Israel. It was the same Dayanim, judges, but now they moved to Israel. We say, En sotrin et dino. The judges do not reconsider the case. They don't reopen it and try and find the reason to acquit him. They execute him right away when they find him. We could learn from here, since they were the people who convicted him, they're not going to change their decision. But if the man who was guilty by the ruling of a Bet Din and then ran away and he went to a different court in Eretz Israel, they would reopen the case because the fact that he got to Eretz Israel brings zechut to a person, brings him merit, and that merit may cause the Dayanim to find a way to call him innocent. But in a case where the criminal is recaptured and brought to another Bet Din outside of Eretz Israel, the Mishnah tells us, kol makom she'amdu shenayim ve'yomeru, in any situation where they capture the murderer and they bring him to a Bet Din outside of Yerushalayim, and two witnesses get up and they say, me'aydin anu be'ish peloni, shenigmar dino be'bet dino shel peloni, we're going to stand up and testify that this man was sentenced to die and they name the Bet Din and the Bet Din of this rabbi, of this Av Bet Din, the head of the Bet Din, Uploni Uploni Aidav, and they name the witnesses who gave the testimony, and they were and he was convicted by Hare Ze Yihare. We kill the person right away based on the verdict of the other court and the testimony that is happening over here. Since you're still in the galut, you're in the exile, there's no extra zechut, there's no extra merit, and therefore there would be no reason to assume that if they reopened the case, they'd come to a different conclusion. The death penalty, capital punishment, can only be given by a court known as the Sanhedrin. The Sanhedrin were Batidin that had 23 judges, Dayanim. The Mishnah here is going to tell us, Sanhedrin oheget ba'aretz ubchutz la'aretz. That Sanhedrin could function both in Israel and outside of Israel. There were courts in every city in Eretz Israel that would deal with these types of cases, and also in the Gola, in the exile, in other countries, judges would be there in different countries. They had the authority to bring the death penalty in all of these places, but only when the Bet Din HaGadol, the great Bet Din in Yerushalayim on Har HaBayit, was functioning, and there, the court of 71 judges that sat in the Bet HaMikdash, only when they were sitting there was there power to all of the other Sanhedrin of 23 to bring those laws, that Bet Din on Har HaBayit stopped sitting around 40 years before the destruction of Bayit Sheni, of the second Beit HaMikdash. And from then on, there has been no death penalty in the Jewish halakha. The Torah tells us that we bring the death penalty in order to punish people and also to serve as a deterrent to people not to commit these different averot and crimes, but the Bet Din does whatever they can. They try very hard to avoid putting people to death. Sanhedrin horeget ehad b'shavua nikret hovlanit. Sanhedrin that kills somebody every 7 years is called a destroyer, since it's the job of the Sanhedrin to do everything they can to acquit, to find a way that a person should not be found guilty. If they are finding people guilty more than every seven years, which is a very long time, but still, they're not doing their job correctly, and they're not investigating properly, and they're being a little bit quick to kill people. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah omer, Ehad l'shivim shana. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, the Sanhedrin should not be given the death penalty more than once every 70 years. So he goes much further and says, we really try to never ever execute somebody. We do everything to avoid it. Rabbi Tarfon ve Rabbi Akiva omrim, Ilu hayinu b'Sanhedrin, lo neherag adam me'olam. Says Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Akiva, if we would have been on the Sanhedrin when they were dealing with these types of cases, they were on the Bet Din or the Sanhedrin later on, after the Bet Din stopped giving the death penalty, they said, if we were dealing with it, no person would ever be executed. We would ask the witnesses questions that would be almost impossible for them to answer, and that would make their testimony invalid, and the person on trial would not be put to death. For example, they said they would ask the Edim, how do you know that there was no internal injury when that person got shot, for example, or stabbed? Maybe he was going to die anyway because he was a terefa. He had an internal injury and he was going to die anyway. And the Ed has no way of answering that. The witness, he has no way of knowing what's going on inside of a person's body. But that would invalidate the testimony, and therefore they would not put the accused murderer to death. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel omer, af hen marbin shofchei damim b'Yisrael, says Rashbag, this opinion that we never put people to death, that's increasing the number of murderers amongst the Jewish people. If people had a deterrent, lema'an yishme'u v'yira'u, if they had a little bit of fear in them, they would be afraid to commit murder. And therefore, even though we're hesitant to carry out the death penalty often, we do carry it out when necessary. So he disagrees with the opinion of Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Akiva.